Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
It's just saying against any team. I don't really, you know, pick my opponents out, but that's a great quarterback we're going against, and I say no because of how dynamic he is, and our defense got to prepare for him. But yeah, you can say that.
Lamar Jackson talking about the matchup between him and Deshaun Watson. It'll be the second time they've met in the NFL. Of course, the Ravens won 41-7 last year. We'll see what happens on Sunday. Deshaun Watson coming off a performance in Kansas City that wasn't as well received as Lamar Jackson's performance in Cleveland. Lamar, the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. Mm-hmm. Deshaun coming off a loss in KC. However, someone closer to Deshaun Watson that knows more about how Deshaun Watson performs and how he should perform thinks that that was one of Deshaun Watson's best games that he's ever played. And I find that very interesting, John Lopez. Quincy Avery, Deshaun's personal quarterback coach, who coaches a lot of guys in the NFL, joined the Gems and Juice podcast with Ryan Rocket and our guy Figgy Fig.
How about that?
And here is what he had to say about what he thought of the Texans quarterback's performance Thursday night against the Chiefs.
I actually watched him play Thursday night, and that was one of the best games that I feel like I've seen him play. Mm. Just in terms of just super even keel, doing the right thing, not trying to do too much, but just doing his job over and over. And I think that I've seen him become such a better quarterback because he's not trying to do too much. Like, he's compartmentalizing. Like, it's a huge game. Everybody's putting it off as him versus Patrick Mahomes, but he didn't try and do too much. He just took the completions, and those games will turn into wins soon, I'm sure. But it's cool to see that maturation.
So he was impressed with what he saw from Deshaun on Thursday.
Yeah, and I get it because I think that's also Quincy Avery obviously has worked with Deshaun for years and knows everything that he can do, can't do. It is interesting, you know, that the best way to describe it is he's being very diplomatic calling it his best game ever, because I think he's basically saying there wasn't a lot of help out there. You know, and he's not inaccurate. I mean, he's right. You know, David Johnson had a nice effort, but not, you know, it wasn't overwhelming. 77 yards, good day, but all that. The receivers, we've been talking about it. Tight ends, we've been talking about it. They were kind of playing catch up the whole time. And I think what he appreciated was Deshaun Watson never really got ahead of himself. He was pressured like crazy, and that's, you know, one of the big stories of the week. So all things considered, 20 out of 32 for 253 yards, you know. All the sacks and hits that he got, you mentioned those numbers earlier. It was one of his best games. I wouldn't call it his best game, but it was one of his better games.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. I'll give you some stats, and this is courtesy of Mike Tannenbaum, who watched the tape, former GM, now works for ESPN. The Texans accounted for 10%. Mm-hmm. Let me say that again, 10%. Let me say it one more time like Mike Jones, 10%. Of all quarterback pressures in the NFL in week one, 10%. One out of every 10 pressure from the 32 teams in the NFL were courtesy of your Houston Texans. They had 24 QB pressures Thursday night against the Kansas City Chiefs. The next most was 14. So they had 10 more than the next most, the Washington football team. Atlanta had 13 and the 49ers had 12. That's the top four.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs pressured Deshaun Watson 60% of the time that he dropped back. 60%. So 10% of all the pressures, and he was pressured 60% of the time he dropped back. Here's Quincy Avery elaborating when he was asked by Ryan Rocket of the Gems and Juice podcast on how exactly he could say that Deshaun Watson played one of his best games. Here's Deshaun's quarterback coach talking about that.
I saw how quickly he was making decisions. He was playing chess. Like, he really did a good job of understanding what they were doing, seeing the pressures, getting the ball out of his hands. Like, that's what you got to – like, people can't – they can't start – they can't continue to blitz you when you do that well of a job, just getting the ball out of your hands, getting it to your playmakers. It's different to see, you know, him play like that and not take a bunch of hits, right? He was just literally doing all the things that we talked about doing this offseason, and he went out there on Thursday night and did those things.
Deshaun loves this dude. He loves Quincy Avery. Works with him all the time. A lot of NFL coaches kind of have mixed feelings about personal quarterback coaches, but Quincy Avery is one of the more respected ones. He'll take what Bill O'Brien has and just kind of put his own spin on things and such. But again, you kind of get the feeling like, look, he's protecting himself. He's still trying to make plays, but the dude was running for his life out there. You know, that's kind of what he's saying. He wants me to interpret it. You know, he's being diplomatic, but that's kind of what he's saying. And he's not wrong. I mean, Deshaun Watson did very well for himself doing that.
It's very discouraging. And we can blame the offensive line. We can blame the skill position guys. We can blame whoever we want. But when you've invested as much as you have in both of those areas, the Texans on a per annual basis have the second most money invested in the wide receiver position. And that's with the Rams paying half of Brandon Cook's salary and without DeAndre Hopkins. And in the offensive line, we've talked about the investments a lot. 3 first-round picks, 3 second-round picks. Laremy Tunsil, the richest offensive lineman of all time. Mm-hmm. Nick Martin, one of the highest paid centers of all time. If you're investing that much and the quarterback's getting pressured that much, either you don't know how to evaluate personnel or there's problems in your offensive scheme. And the problem with that, and it's a unique situation in Houston, and this is why Bill O'Brien is a guy that everybody has a take on. In another city, you could sit there and you could say, well, this guy did this. He brought in these guys. What is he thinking? Yada, yada, yada. This offensive line's been put together really the last year since King Bill has been here. And King Bill has made the financial decisions with a lot of these guys. Randall Cobb, Brandon Cooks, these guys, these receivers, these are Bill O'Brien guys. So it all goes back to one guy. And it's troubling because neither one of these things makes you feel any better because it's the same scheme. And these guys aren't going anywhere. This is going to be your offensive line for a while. You have a lot of commitment to these guys financially and as far as time goes. So this can't happen.
Yeah.
Why this happens, it just can't happen. And when you hear Bill O'Brien say that he thought the offensive tempo was good, and we're watching with our own eyes, and you can tell the offensive tempo was not that good.
It's the same.
And he says that the offensive line did a good job. And they did a good job blocking, but you have these stats. I don't know how I am supposed to feel that this is going to improve anytime soon if this was good enough for Bill O'Brien. And some people will say, well, he's a coach. He's not going to call out his guys. Okay, we'll hear in just a sec. We'll hear in about 7 minutes. He had no problem calling out Kyahmi Fairbairn for missing the field goal and the defense for not holding up.
Or the receivers, as we heard yesterday.
In the end of the first half. He had no problem doing that.
Yeah.
He has no problem talking about the tackling. But when it comes to the offense, Bill O'Brien's very hesitant to call out this offense.
And specifically the offensive line. Why might that be? Look, he said the receivers, he kind of took a veiled little bit of a shot at Deshaun when he said, you know, we had a hot read that we didn't see. Well, who is that? And but really, what he was talking about was the receivers, and they didn't make the plays. However he put it, you know, you guys have heard this, and so he's kind of being very frank about that. but not about the offensive line. Why do you think that is, Landry? Why would that be for you? Let me put it that way. Because you're the dude that sent two first rounders and a second to the left for the left tackle, gave the center an $18 million guaranteed contract, signed the right guard, Zach Fulton, who had a really, really hard time with $5 million guaranteed, and spent a first and a second rounder on your right tackle and your left guard. So you're the guy that is saying, look, I'm spending, we're committing to the offensive line. You're not going to say all of a sudden, boy, they were bad, because it just makes you look worse.
And when we talk about Deshaun Watson and we say, well, he played good, it really doesn't matter. Like, it's kind of, in the big scheme of things, in the bottom line of things, it's really irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Because if everything around Deshaun Watson isn't functioning at a decent level, he can play as good as he wants, but it's not really going to matter. Mm-hmm. Like, it's irrelevant. And that's not a situation you want to be in. As a matter of fact, I think that's probably the most helpless situation that an NFL franchise can be in, is when your quarterback's playing good, but it doesn't mean a damn thing. Mm-hmm. Quarterbacks are supposed to elevate you to reaching the goals that you set out. They're supposed to set you up to where you reach that AFC championship for the first time, to where they elevate your play. But if a guy who watches this quarterback and spends 24/7 with this quarterback trying to make him better, if he says that that was one of the best performances he had, and you got your ass ran off the field by 14 points,
right,
it's helpless to sit there and know that the quarterback might be playing good, but in the big scheme of things, because of the things around him, because of the system around him, because of the personnel, whatever it is, if that feeling continues, it's about as helpless as it gets around here, J-Lo.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you change that. I don't know if it does change. Hopefully next week we're talking about Baltimore and we're talking about the adjustments that coaches make. But from what we have to evaluate one week in, that was piss poor. Mm-hmm. Coaches can make adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. It's how you adjust. And it's going to be very interesting to see the first time, because we got to see Tim Kelly's offense for the first time last week. We're going to get to see how he adjusts for the first time too. And I got to hope. I got to beg when I go to bed tonight and I pray, I'm going to pray that this looks better, because if not, it's going to be a long season. It's going to be a very long season, and it's not going to get better unless something changes.
No, I agree with you. And we do need to be fair here and state the obvious, because you're talking about a coach in the NFL. He's clearly not telling the offensive line the same things he's telling us, you know. And he's clearly not, you know, he knows that these guys, that his career, his job, you know, is tied to those guys. So I think he's going to make that very clear with them, and hopefully it'll change.
Should also be noted, Pro Football Focus, actually, and you can take their numbers with a grain of salt. I think it's kind of unfair because Mahomes didn't have to do as much, but they had Deshaun Watson playing better than Mahomes.
Yeah.
They
did a lot of good things.
They watched the tape,
man.
And I think a lot of times it comes into how much pressure the quarterback's facing. What can he do?
Mm-hmm.
It's not as simple as he completed this percent of his passes. It's how much pressure did he have? What could he have done given the situation? How open were the receivers?
Yeah.
The guys who actually sit down, watch the tape for a living, and break it down, again, take their ratings with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
But Deshaun's quarterback coach said he played one of the best games that he's ever seen. And Pro Football Focus, who does this for a living, they said that the best quarterback on the field that played the best on Thursday, despite the fact there was a 14-point gap, was Deshaun Watson. Not Pat Mahomes. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Bill O'Brien spoke on what cost the Texans the game on Thursday night. He called out the kicker and the defense while still ignoring the problems on offense. We'll hear what B.O.B. had to say earlier today next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Texans-Ravens on Sunday. Bill O'Brien met with the media types earlier today, and he said some interesting things about stuff that needs to improve. I find this interesting because yesterday, or actually I should say Monday, on the coach's show, which you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610, 5 o'clock every Monday, Bill O'Brien was asked about the offensive line. And again, the offensive line per Mike Tannenbaum, or I should say the offense, because it's not just the O-line,
And to be fair, the tight ends were bad in blocking.
Accounted for 10% of the pressures across all teams in the NFL. Let me say that again. All the times that a quarterback was pressured in the NFL with all 32 teams in week one, the Texans had 10% of those pressures. They had 24 pressures. Second most was 14 by the Washington football team, and the Chiefs pressured Watson on 60% of his dropbacks. Here was Bill O'Brien, however, talking about the offensive line and the job that he thought they did.
You know, the offensive line, again, like I've said every year, I thought they actually blocked well. There were a couple times where there was a miscommunication. Somebody came free. I think we'll clean that up, give the Chiefs credit. They did a couple good things on defense. But I think that our offensive line really, I thought their run blocking was really good. I think pass protection-wise, there were a couple things. But overall, you know, Deshaun had some decent time. And then, again, the other parts of it aren't always with the offensive line. You know, we had a hot that we missed, and we ended up taking a sack on that. That's not the offensive line's fault. That's, you know, the skill guys, they've got to do a better job. So, you know, it's not always on the line. So I thought the line actually played pretty well.
Now, he did say it's on the receivers too, or on the receivers or whatever. But that's quarterback and receivers. And if you say, you know, they played pretty well, You can't be saying that to the team. You know, you cannot, because I gave out some numbers yesterday. We talked about this, you know, about, you know, 42% of the time when he went into pass into the pattern, so to speak, he was under pressure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those numbers that you had from Tannenbaum were even worse than what Pro Football Focus had in passing plays.
He seems to like he even said that the offense wasn't that bad on Monday before the coaches show. So he doesn't think the offense was as bad as your eyes might tell you, and as bad as a lot of people feel common sense would tell you. Now, as for the defense, this is Bill O'Brien, and I want you to compare how he talks about the offense to how he talks about the defense. This is Bill O'Brien talking about the defense, specifically the tackling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, the tackling has to improve. You know, obviously from last week, you know, we worked on it Monday. We'll work on it again today. And I believe it'll get better. We have good tacklers. We have guys that have tackled, you know, well in the past. And I think it'll improve. I know it'll improve. And it needs to improve this week because, you know, this is a team that you know, they just have a lot of guys, especially Lamar, that can play in space that, you know, you got to get down on the ground. And it's not just one-on-one tackling. It's you know, 11 guys to the ball, vice tackles, all the different types of tackles, angle tackles that we all need to improve on.
Okay, so the tackling needs to improve. But the offensive line blocked pretty good. Here's him also talking about tempo, and I thought this was interesting. If you saw his face when McClain asked him, it almost looked like McClain was speaking a completely different language. Our guy John McClain, who joins us at 10:40 every Tuesday, this is the offensive tempo. And if you watch these games, you can just tell – and I've heard Clint talk about the tempo of the offense for a while. Nobody's expecting this to be a college offense where you run a play every 11 seconds or anything like that. But there is a noticeable difference from the Texans running tempo when they need to, when they fall behind, and other teams. Like it's very evident. They have to look over the sidelines a lot. A lot of times it seems like they're still not going to get the playoff. They're still snapping the ball with 5 seconds left, despite the fact they're running no huddle. It's not as fast of a tempo when the Texans need to run it, which I thought was common sense, which is why I thought John McClain asked the question the way he did. But Bill O'Brien, not only did he think the offensive line did good, he also likes the tempo of this offense.
Yeah.
Bill, when you guys were down in the fourth quarter, a lot of time was coming off the clock between plays. Would you like to play faster in a situation like that? You kind of talk about just the tempo of your offense. Does it change from game to game, or do you like it to be consistent?
I thought I guess the way that you looked at it, I guess it was – I thought our pace was pretty good in the fourth quarter. I mean, we're trying to – you know, we got to get the play in and get the play communicated and – you know, I think we scored a couple touchdowns. Really the game last week came down to the end of the half and the beginning of the first. That's where the game, you know, we had a chance to go down there and hit a field goal. We handled that pretty well until the end of the drive at the end of the half. And then, they got the ball and they went down and scored and then kicked the field goal. And then they came out and scored touchdown in the first drive of the second half. That's, you know, where those scores, those can be, you can double up on scores at the end of the half and the beginning of the second half. We've got to just do a better job of that. You know, I thought our pace was pretty good, you know, throughout the game.
I mean, you know, and you've heard me say this before, this is what's a little bit bothered. It just kind of bothers me. It's one of my tempo is any speed. When people say you got to play with tempo, they mean you got to play faster. So you can kind of interpret it however you want. A team that is crawling along 3 yards in a cloud of dust, they have tempo. It's just a slow tempo. Tempo is often misused. So when he's saying I liked our tempo, that's you can say what I think the question is with the Texans is, do they need to play faster? And the answer is probably yes, because they don't play fast enough. They look like the exact same offense that we saw last year. And so I feel like a little bit frustrated because I had such high hopes for Tim Kelly. But again, I'm not jumping off the boat just yet because I want to see if they can change that and play with speed, a little quicker pace this week.
Could I interest you in stats?
Yes, sir.
Just to back up what your eyes, what John McClain's eyes, and what my eyes are telling me when it comes to tempo in the second half. Because Bill O'Brien, the head coach and GM of your team, just said he liked the tempo in the second half. And we also know that by the time the Texans got the ball in the second half, they were trailing 24-7. So they were trailing 17 points.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's when you should be playing faster. But per Football Outsiders, in week one of the NFL season, in the second half, the average tempo between plays in the league,
speed.
As a whole.
Remember,
speed. Yes. The average speed per play was 26.97 seconds. That was the average.
Okay.
The Texans took 27 seconds between plays in the second half, despite the fact when they touched the ball the first
and
time,
they were trailing.
They were down 17 points. Yeah. They were down three possessions. That's 18th in the league.
Who gave you that stat?
Football Outsiders. That's 18th in the league. The Houston Texans were the 18th fastest in the league when it comes to seconds per play, 27. That was their tempo in the second half of games. They were less than the league average, and they did not touch the ball in the second half until they were down 17 points.
Yeah.
So if the coach really does think that tempo
was okay.
No, he
flat out said, I thought we had good tempo.
Let me hear him again.
Yeah.
So let me say this stat again, and let me hear Bill O'Brien, and we'll hear John McClain. Okay, so the Texans took 27 seconds. This is in the second half. This isn't in the game as a whole.
No, this is when you're trailing.
27 seconds between plays. The league average was 26.97. This is the 18th fastest tempo in the entire NFL. And Bill O'Brien thought the tempo was okay.
Bill, when you guys were down in the fourth quarter, a lot of time was coming off the clock between plays. Would you like to play faster in a situation like that? You kind of talk about just the tempo of your offense. Does it change from game to game, or do you like it to be consistent?
I thought I guess the way that you looked at it, I thought our pace was pretty good in the fourth quarter. I mean, we're trying to, you know, we got to get the play in and get the play communicated. And, I think we scored a couple touchdowns. Really the game last week came down to the end of the half and the beginning of the first. That's where the game, you know, we had a chance to go down there and hit a field goal. We handled that pretty well until the end of the drive at the end of the half. And then they got the ball and they went down and scored and then kicked the field goal. And then they came out and scored touchdown in the first drive of the second half. That's, you know, where those scores, those can be, you can double up on scores at the end of the half and the beginning of the second half. We've got to just do a better job of that. You know, I thought our pace was pretty good, you know, throughout the game.
It wasn't. And you want me to add Man. Salt to the wounds just yes. to show like instincts?
Yes.
I mean, cause these stats are amazing. So second half down 17. 27 seconds between plays for the Houston Texans. That's the 18th slowest tempo in the NFL. And you did not touch the ball till you're down 17. First half, and this includes the scripted plays, 24 seconds. They ran a faster tempo in the first half before the game got out of control than they did in the second half when they were down 17 points.
Sense of urgency. Sense of urgency just wasn't there. And that's... That's a problem, man. I mean, and the reason it's a problem is because, you know, we've seen that from Bill O'Brien's offenses. He's answered that same question how many times, you know, about the tempo, the pace, the speed of the offense. And there it is again. And there you're trailing at Kansas City in a game that important, and you're slowing things down.
Three possessions right there. So, John McClain, have no fear. The way you saw it is the way that the data saw it as well. It's the way that most of the loopholes and myself and John Lopez saw it. So
you're serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. I'm dead serious. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Tillman Fertitta, he is growing as an NBA owner. A scary moment for the Astros that'll make the Sparkle Princess scared. And a lot of stuff going on around the NFL that impacts your Houston Texans. The hits are lit next.
Playing all the hits. These are the hot stories of the day. Presented by United Rentals. The tools and equipment you need for any job. You're in the loop with Houston's sports leader. Sports Radio 610.
Could I interest you in some stats, John Lopez?
You darn right. You dropped those. You were holding back on me in the pre-show, man. You dropped that last stat on me. That was pretty enlightening. For those who are not listening, give me that stat again.
Second half tempo, despite the fact Bill O'Brien tried to hike his leg on John McClain when he asked about it, was 18th fastest in the NFL at 27 seconds. The league average was 26.97. That tempo was actually, they actually ran a slower tempo in the second half when they were trailing by 17.
Man.
Than they did in the first half. That's troubling.
That is very troubling.
That's somewhat
well, because
troubling.
It's familiar. That's why.
But Bill O'Brien might not be a stat guy. That's the one thing. He has said that he's not a stat guy.
We're not all stat guys.
Or is he?
Because
here is Bill O'Brien talking about the trends in week one, and you tell me whether or not this sounds like a guy that is a stat guy.
For the most part, all the games were competitive. I thought it was really good. I think, you know, we looked at some things. I think it's the teams that played the cleanest. It's the teams that won the penalty battle, won the turnover battle. I think they won 85% of the games this week. The teams that won the penalty battle, but maybe they lost the turnover battle, they won, I think it was like 80% of the game. So I think it still comes down to that. Playing cleaner football. You know, last week we start out, we gain positive yards on the first play. The second play is incomplete. The third play, we jump off sides. Like, if we can play a cleaner game, I think that's a big part of what it's just fundamentally, you know, making sure that we eliminate the administrative penalties, you know, the false starts, the illegal formations, the neutral zone infractions. You're going to get holding calls. You're going to get DPIs. Those things are going to happen. Legal contacts, those things may happen. But it's the mental mistakes that we have to really clean up, because the teams that really did that well, they won for the most part. So we're working hard on that this week to clean a lot of that up.
Sounds like a stat guy to me.
Yeah, that's a lot of stats. I really didn't feel like they were all they really penalized that often. I mean, not unusually bad, you know. But okay, whatever. I mean, if you think five penalties for 37 yards is bad, I'm not going to argue, because I don't want any penalties. But I don't feel like the penalties were like that significant in the game. You know what I mean?
Water polo tight end, your favorite player. Where's water polo guy at, by the way?
Oh, he's giving up on us. Yeah. I'd love to hear from him.
We haven't heard from him. Kahale Waring, of course.
Have you actually ever seen a water polo game?
He was on IR all of last year. He played one game this year. They decided to release Jordan Thomas. Kahale Waring played 9 special team snaps. No offensive snaps, but he's now back on injured reserve for at least 3 games. So he will miss at least 21 of the first 22 games he's played, when only playing 9 snaps, none of which on offense. He was put on injured reserve. Here's Bill O'Brien with an update on the water polo tight end.
Yeah, Kahale had a couple things going on injury-wise, and so we felt like, you know, to put him on IR for, you know, let's just call it 3 weeks, see where he's at after 3 weeks, we felt like that would help him where he is injury-wise. And so that was the decision that we made yesterday. It really kind of happened on Monday. So, you know, that's why it was made yesterday. So that's where it's at.
Here's the thing with Kahale Waring. You spent a third-round draft pick on him. He had 16, 20 weeks last year because of concussion that he was on IR. Played 9 snaps on special teams, as you pointed out, and now he's on IR for another 3 weeks. You got to be a little bit delicate with this because we may be all wrong and it may be just all legitimate injuries and this dude is just bad. It's just bad luck. But that's not what I think. That's not my opinion. My opinion is this is the Texans and Bill O'Brien specifically saying this guy ain't good. I mean, maybe he'll get there, but he's not good enough to put on the field right now. And that's a problem when you spent the 3rd-round draft pick on him. He's closer to Benny Joppru right now than anything. And the other reason you can think that is because this team needs tight ends. If he can hobble onto the field, he would have a chance to play. Because obviously, you know, Thomas is gone. Jordan Thomas is gone. We're not getting great production out of Darren Fells. He had a bad game week one. Akins is good. And you brought in, Farrell Brown, off the street, basically. To replace Kahale Ware.
Speaking of Farrell Brown,
yeah,
hit the song, Figgy.
There we
hit
go.
There we song. Go.
What is this?
Church camp, man.
Well, I never went to church camp.
Church camp. Yeah. That's why you're such a dirty SOB.
What?
Enough of that. But Farrell Brown does have an appreciation for one of the finer things in life. This is Farrell Brown, by the way. If you need to know about Farrell Brown, who's been activated with the water polo tight end going to IR, he was highly recruited out of high school. Michigan was originally where he committed. He decided, however, to go to Oregon. He went to Oregon, promising start to his career, but then he had a significant knee injury in which he tore 2 knee ligaments. Mm-hmm. Then went to the Raiders practice squad, went to the Browns practice squad, and while he was in Cleveland, he talked about one of the finer things in life that has me rooting for the Pharaoh.
Taco salad is one of the best things ever known to mankind.
Attaboy.
What I like about taco salad is that I can dress it up in so many different ways. It kind of never gets old for me. I always said if it was one food that I can live off of for the rest of my life, it'd be tacos. Man, one time when I made taco salad, I mixed 1 pound of lamb and 1 pound of ground beef. And it was amazing. So I always switch it up so it never gets old. Because like I said, I would live off this for the rest of my life. So you got to find little things to tweak in and out, you know.
There you go. So speaking of that, mm-hmm. Here's something that he's thrown into the mix. He went to the chip aisle. And I got to make this clear. A lot of people on the text line were a little critical of this. You don't soak the chips in the meat. You drain the meat. And then you put the chips in, okay? That's an important detail for all you haters out there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the finest chips on the market, in my opinion. Never even thought about putting it in taco salad until the Pharaoh saved the day.
This is the game changer. Chili cheese Fritos. This is a part of the seasoning with the meat. Cook meat, drain, wet seasoning, dry seasoning, and then you crunch this bag up and put it in the meat and let it simmer. And then it's going to just take the flavor out of this world. And then that's when you start dressing up the taco salad. You can do Doritos. You can do tortillas. You can do blue chips, red chips.
But we'll let that slide.
So it doesn't matter. Once that meat got the dry, the wet, and the chili cheese fries, it don't matter how you dress it up. It's going to be amazing.
There you go.
I love this.
Chili cheese Fritos are
good. You got to try this weekend.
Oh, yeah. It's getting strained. Put the chili cheese.
So they're actually the meat is cooked and they're crunchy, and then you just simmer it a little more.
Yeah, you strain it because he does the wet stuff. So the wet taco stuff. So you put it in there, strain it, then you crunch the Fritos and just let the Fritos go in there. You don't put them in there when it's boiling. You let it sit a little bit.
Right.
That's how you do it. So I'm gonna try it. Farrell Brown. Don't know if you're worth a damn on the field. Can't be much worse than the water polo tight end, quite honestly. But you've changed my life for the better. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much, Farrell. NFL news, Allen Robinson. It was believed yesterday that the Bears receiver, because he stripped all of his Instagram of the Chicago Bears, was disgruntled with the team and asked for a trade. However, his agent has said that is not true. Allen Robinson, still happy to go, happy to be a Chicago Bear, despite the fact they're 1-0, little drama in Chi-Town.
Yeah, obviously, these things don't come out of nowhere. I'm not going to tell you exactly what what I believe here, but he's a good player, that's for sure. I mean, he's not super superstar, but he's a darn good player. And Adam Schefter is the one that said he talked he didn't do this. So I would tend to lean that way.
Someone who is a superstar. Yeah. Someone who many people probably took early in their fantasy draft.
Okay.
Michael Thomas expected to miss several weeks with a high ankle sprain.
Did you draft
they
him?
They said, yeah, he was my first round pick.
Oh my God.
They said that he could. I had three guys go down, all running backs.
Oh, man.
And I had Michael Thomas go out. So, yeah, it's not a good start for me. I am scratching and clawing. To say the
Who
very
were the running back you lost?
Don't worry about it.
Now I brought it up.
Let's not get into that. We only have to play one. Let's just not even get into it. Just go down the injured list and you see
Connor.
Them all. Just go down the injured list and you'll see them all. Four guys injured right now. Pathetic.
That's awful.
He could be
Why
out.
Why am I laughing?
Because it's funny. He could be out into week six, the bye, but they're acting like he might push forward. But Michael Thomas is going to be out. Mm-hmm. Le'Veon Bell also placed on IR. Mm. He could
He's
be
on
out
your roster, right?
3 weeks. Nick Chubb of the Browns.
You got him too.
Don't have him.
Oh, okay.
I wish.
You must have Marlon Mack.
Yeah, he scored a touchdown and then got hurt.
So you have Michael Thomas, no, Le'Veon Bell, and Marlon Mack.
No, I don't want to lose my fantasy team. I did have Marlon Mack. I will say that. And he scored a touchdown and then got hurt.
Not anymore.
Yeah, he's gone.
Not anymore. He's not.
Nick Chubb, when asked about the stuff that the Browns do well, because he had 10 carries for 70 yards mm-hmm. or 60 yards, he said, yeah, we do a lot of things. We run the ball well, but we need to do other things well. What do you think he was talking about?
Yeah.
Biggie, I mean, you're a Browns fan. What was
Baker Mayfield?
About?
Yep.
Okay, maybe.
Talking about Baker.
Who's the backup there, by the way?
I don't even know. Who is it?
Case Keenum. I'm sorry.
I really think they should consider starting him.
I think so.
I really do. Stefanski went to an NFC championship with Case Keenum.
This is true.
I really think they should consider starting Case Keenum.
How far away are they?
2 weeks. If Baker Mayfield sucks, 2 weeks.
Could be.
49ers, they signed Mohamed Sanu, mm-hmm. who the Patriots just released. So there's some stuff going on around the NFL. We'll familiarize ourselves with all the stuff going around the league, all the matchups at around 12:20, 12:40-ish. We'll do that. Astros, 12 games remaining this season. Yesterday, Jose Altuve returned to the lineup. Here's Jose Altuve talking about the final stretch of the season for the Astros.
Yeah, I think these games are very important. We are trying to make the playoff. We are in a good spot. And the only thing I want is to, you know, do everything I can to contribute with the team and help them win.
Jose, it's been several years since the Astros have been in a position where they have to win at the end of the season to make the playoffs. How do you judge the confidence of the clubhouse as you go into these final 2 weeks?
I think we have a lot of confidence. We know the kind of players we have, and you know, we just got to go game by game, win one game at a time, and I think we'll be fine.
All right, so yesterday was the first time since August 6th that the Astros had Springer, Altuve, Brantley, and Bregman all in the lineup at the same time.
Then what happened?
George Springer led off the game with a Springer dinger.
Okay.
The Astros were tied at one, and then Carlos Correa fouls the ball off his foot. He has to get helped off the field.
It was bad.
It did not look good.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, that's what she said.
Astros scored 2 runs in the seventh. Maldonado added a home run in the eighth, and they ended up winning the game. Urquidy, by the way, 7 innings, 7 strikeouts.
That dude, he was spinning it,
He
man.
Might be in the postseason, which, by the way, Rob Manfred said today that they're going to continue this expanded postseason next year probably.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
We're going to see a lot of teams in the postseason.
World Series in baseball. Arlington.
There it is.
So they finally got one.
By the way, Correa's okay.
Well,
he had the x-ray. It's a bone
the
bruise.
The MRI was not, you know, didn't say it was broken or anything. But, yeah, bone bruises can keep you out for a while.
They can keep you out for a while. Mm-hmm. Just rest up, Carlos. 12 games remaining. You got to hold off the Mariners. You're 2 games up. Mm-hmm. And there's more good news.
There
kinda.
Is.
Kinda. Justin Verlander, he's going to throw to hitters today. He's going to throw 50 pitches. This could mean that he's going to have to get the Tommy John and miss next season.
I'm glad you said that.
But Verlander's throwing to hitters, or is he? Because they said he's throwing to Abraham.
Three dudes are just going to rote. Go ahead.
Toro. Jack Mayfield.
Yeah.
And Miles Straw. So is he really throwing to hitters?
They're just going
to
rotate through.
But are they? Is he really throwing to hitters?
Yeah, he is.
If he allows a hit, by the way, he doesn't need to come back.
Is it wrong that I don't even want him to throw?
You just want him to rest?
I want him to get the freaking elbow taken care of. Because he's you just said it, what I was thinking. He's probably going to have the surgery now in the offseason.
He's going to miss the year next year,
yeah,
regardless. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, Justin Verlander trying to get back. NBA news, Clippers blow a 3-1 lead. Denver versus the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. Second straight series where Denver has overcome a 3-1 deficit. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George sent home. Doc Rivers could be fired in Los Angeles. And we know that the Rockets are going to be in the business for a new head coach. This was Tillman Fertitta yesterday on CNBC talking about Daryl Morey and the process of hiring
the process.
A head coach.
You can talk to me about business all day long, but I personally wouldn't know what coach to hire. That's why you have a basketball operations team that's made of a half a dozen people that use all kind of analytics and experience. And, you know, they'll make a recommendation to me as they do about everything. And I'm the sign-off guy. Okay, that's it. And I wouldn't know how to interview a basketball coach. Now, if you want me to go interview a CEO for a company, I'll be the first one to say I think I'm better than anybody else. But, you know, to be successful in business, and I say this in my book, you better know what you know, and you better know what you don't know. And I surely know what I don't know when it comes to basketball.
Is he growing or is he lying?
No, I think he's being honest. I don't know if growing is necessarily...
No, as an owner, is he starting to realize he doesn't know?
No, I think he knows that he needs to get this right because, he's feeling the heat. You and I, fans, a lot of people across town are like, man, you botched the Mike D'Antoni thing. National media, you know, all the guys that are you know, on Daryl Morey's speed dial, you know, Woj and all those guys are telling... You know, are talking about how they botched the D'Antoni deal. I think he's going to trust Morey, which, again, Daryl Morey's safe, and then he's going to sign off on it. But that doesn't mean he's still not going to meddle. He's a meddler. He's going to meddle.
Here's just an example, because he says he doesn't know much about basketball. He's a CEO type of guy. This is just the past. When Mike D'Antoni was here last offseason, Tillman Fertitta talking about contract extensions or non-contract extensions with former Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni.
I made Mike a great extension offer. It was one of the better base salaries in basketball, but also had the highest incentives in basketball. Mike could make $4 million in incentives. It was $4 million worth of incentives. And if you go from the second round to winning the championship, you can get there real easy. I would prefer him to always work with at least a two-year contract.
Okay, there's that. Also, last season when the Rockets lost to the Warriors, the guy who just said yesterday that he doesn't know much about basketball, talking about his team losing to the Golden State Warriors.
And they came to our home court and they kicked our ass, and that's just the way it is. They outscored us by 10 points in the fourth quarter. They won, they're the champions, and we lost.
Is it any more painful because it's in your backyard?
Hell yeah, it's more painful. You know, this was not fun, and I guarantee you, James and Chris and our team is very upset right now. They kicked our ass on our home court. They beat us by 10 points in the fourth quarter. It's unacceptable.
Okay, maybe he's growing. I'm serious. Like, maybe he's growing as an owner
too, though. I mean, anybody gets upset. If you're the owner of the team, you're ticked off.
But you should be a little more respectful of the players, right?
Maybe
they'll pick up some Tillmanisms. You think James Harden and Chris Paul wanted to hear maybe they can the guys who've played this game for three decades, you think they liked hearing their owner who owns restaurants say maybe they can pick up Tillmanisms and get over the hump? Do you think they enjoyed that?
Do they say restaurants?
They probably say restaurants.
Mm-hmm. They probably say restaurants because that's how most people say it.
It's a trick question.
Big news in college football, Big Ten. They're going to play football starting at the end of October. 8 games. They'll have a conference title game the same week as the Big 12, ACC, and SEC. Pac-12 still MIA.
Yeah, that's the story, man. I mean, first of all, the Big Ten looks goofy, dumb. I mean, indecisive. All of a sudden, they're seeing some things happening that are encouraging, and they jump on in. Doesn't make them look any better. Pac-12 is not doing it. I don't know how they're going to play this out, like Rose Bowl-ish, you know, how they're going to do that. I know they're not necessarily tied to it, but after the playoff, they're tied to it. It'll be interesting.
The Big Ten kind of reminds me of Jerry Maguire, because when Jerry Maguire gets fired, he's like, all right, who's going with me? Let's go. Let's go. Let's get it. Let's go. Let's go. And only Renee Zellweger followed him out. And that was the Pac-12. Yeah. That was the Pac-12. And now Jerry Maguire didn't come running back to the firm, but the Big Ten basically just came running back to the firm. And old Renee Zellweger, a.k.a. the Pac-12, is just kind of on their own, at their sisters at a man-hating party.
Did he write a manifesto like Jerry Maguire?
Something like that. 713-572-4610 to get in. It is hump day here on In the Loop. Deshaun Watson, never thought I would say this. I'm not going to lie. I did not think I would say this. He's getting sued. I'm serious. It's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.